97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Beamer in for Reardon here on 97.1 FM Talk. If I accidentally say the wrong call letters, I apologize. But I'm not going to, because I don't do that. We got a lot more to get to. Brad Young, happy to hear from Brad Young later in the show. Dennis Hancock's going to join us, talk about the St. Louis County executive being indicted. Jeff Mordock will be here as well as much, much more. So don't touch that dial. But tomorrow's a very interesting day here and throughout the United States. Sue Thomas, and I'm so sorry I did not say hi in the first segment. I'm just my mind is all over the place. Sue, how you been?
Joe, great. How about yourself?
Oh, no complaints. No complaints, except I did climb through my kitchen window 2 days ago.
What happened?
My son locked me out of the house and my wife wasn't home.
How old is he now?
He is 2 years and 2 months.
Okay. And he wandered to the front door and locked it?
So I was making chicken on the grill because we were having Caesar salads.
Sure.
So
that sounds good.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be warm. So I was like, okay, he wants to be outside. My wife wasn't going to be home for a few hours. So we went outside. He played around. I made the chicken. And then I took him and, you know, I said, all right, I'll be right in. I left the door open because I'm not going to leave him locked in, you know, closed in the house. And I turned to put the chicken on the plate. He closes the door and turns the lock.
There you go.
Boy.
Yeah. And then he's laughing through the window. And I'm like, all right, buddy, let's turn it back. And don't you know, he turns the padlock, the top lock.
Oh no!
So
wow,
yeah, I'm like, there's no way I'm gonna get this. I'm gonna get him to turn both. So now, luckily, I had burnt the bacon, so the kitchen window was open. Because the bacon was burning, and the thing, you know, the fan wasn't doing its job, and I didn't want to set the alarm off. So I run to the front of the house. I say, you know, because then he went from laughing to crying when he didn't see me.
Right.
And, I jumped through the window into the kitchen sink. And it took me 37 years to have to climb through a window. But that was the time.
You know, what else are you going to do? It's nice work.
Yes. I'm glad that I was able to save him and save the chicken. So the salads turned out great. And, you know, I don't know about you guys. I'm the kind of guy, if I don't have to tell my wife, I don't tell her. Here's where the problem happened. I thought I had a few more minutes, so I hadn't put the screen back into the window. So she gets home and she goes, why is the screen out of the window and your shoes are on the front porch? So I had to explain to her what happened.
I think I would tell her that. That's entertaining. She's not going to care that your sad self had to walk through the window. She's just glad everybody's fine.
Boy. Yes, but she likes to play what if, and what if the bacon hadn't burned and the window was locked?
Yeah, well,
hey,
there
Joe,
is
did
that.
Did the bacon survive? Did the bacon make it?
Well, I made new bacon, Fred. We didn't eat the burnt bacon. Don't worry. I made new bacon, and the salad turned out fabulous.
Fred was panicking.
Yeah, he was worried about the bacon. I think we all were.
Oh, the bacon, the chicken, and the kid were all fine. But, you know, he's 2 years and 2 months, which means I have known you guys for 2 years and 3 months.
That's right.
Yeah.
It was a month before he was born the first time. And they've moved me back to the studio that I started in, which I don't like. So, you know, I got to ask you guys a question before we hit the break here. Because, you know, tomorrow's a big day. Tomorrow is the trade deadline while we're on the air. What do you expect the Cardinals, who are 4.5 games out of a wild card spot, to do?
I think we're going to do some dealing. Ethan, what do you think?
I expect for the Cardinals to trade at least two players. One of them will be Ryan Helsley, who I think, based off of what we're seeing today, there's a good chance the Cardinals are going to get some good returns. Some relief pitchers have started to get traded today, and there's been some pretty good return for them. So you could argue that Ryan Helsley is the best relief pitcher on the trade market, so I expect him to get traded. You know, there's a couple other guys that could, Phil Maton, Steven Matz. I don't know if I expect them to make any huge blockbuster trades, anything involving any of their young controllable pieces or even Nolan Arenado. But I do think that they will be active. But it wouldn't surprise me if it comes down to the wire for the Cardinals, because John Mozeliak kind of holds all the cards right now because he's got some big pieces that teams are going to want.
Uh-oh, you hit the Ethan button. What were your thoughts?
Well, I'll tell you this. I mean, the market, Ethan mentioned relief pitchers, and the Mets just overbought for a relief pitcher. They got rid of two of their top 12 prospects. But, I mean, they're also about to get swept by the Padres, so they need to do something. But, I mean, the Cardinals are still in it. You don't want to throw the season away. I mean, it's very possible to make up 4.5 games.
Well, most people here would say that they are not feeling great about where the Cardinals are. It's a young team. It's a very young team. They've had some high highs. They've had some really low lows. The starting pitching has been atrocious the past month. So that would be the reason for the lack of optimism as far as being able to make a run here in the final couple months of the year. It gets even more difficult when you trade away your all-star closer. Not impossible, but not a playoff appearance. Not looking extremely likely at this point for the Cardinals in 25.
Will be something interesting to follow tomorrow. Like I said, the deadline right in the middle of this show. When we come back, it's Sue's News on 97.1 FM Talk. It's Joe Beamer in for Mark Reardon here on 97.1 FM Talk. Sorry. And as we do this time every day, it's time for Sue's News.
Allegations are deeply concerning.
Does the president have any comment?
We're not going to comment.
It's not clear messaging.
No, 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 no.
And now, Sue's News. Brought to you by Sue.
You guys, we haven't talked about this, but I just got back from a trip where we actually flew. And we had talked up to that time about, do you have to take off your shoes at the TSA or not?
Yeah, there have been some changes, haven't there?
There have been. But remember, Fred, when we talked about that, what they said was some markets you do, some markets you don't. So I got to the airport, and we got there a little bit, you know, tight. And I'll tell you what, this was an early flight, like 7:25 in the morning, and there were people everywhere.
Isn't that amazing?
Even in, Ethan, what's your line, the pre-check or the whatever, the $60 for 5 years thing? That line was really long.
TSA.
So it was like everything was long, and I thought, man, I'm not sure we're going to get there. But I had my little baggie with all my 3 ounces or less things, you know, and the thing. So we get up there and finally go through. TSA, no shoes off. And this is at Lambert at the Southwest Terminal, Terminal 2. No little bins. And when I went to take out my little baggie, the guy said, nope, don't need it. Keep it in there.
Oh.
It was unbelievable. So it actually moved faster than usual, except people were freaked out by it. So it took longer. Like, I think in a couple months or when people are used to it, it'll be fine. Kept the shoes on, no baggie. But then flying back, you think, well, do they do this everywhere? And Cleveland had bins. So you had to put bins in there, but they did not make you take out your liquids, and you kept your shoes on. So this is a thing.
I love it.
I do, too, and I hope that it sticks around.
Isn't it nice to see airports finally, you know, catching up with the world?
Oh, my God.
And doing things that they should have done years ago.
But it's still not to the point where I'm like, okay, well, I've got to pull these liquids. I don't trust it, is what I'm saying.
Sure.
I just don't think it's universal yet. But hopefully it will be.
Yeah.
Okay. On this day in history, 49 years ago, in 1976, Bruce Jenner, remember him?
Oh, yeah.
Won the decathlon gold medal at the Montreal Olympics. And then he was on the Wheaties thing. Fred, did you have a box of the Wheaties with him on?
No, but I've got the Sports Illustrated cover story on him from that same week.
Of course you do.
Of course. And you don't have the box of Wheaties?
No, I don't have the Wheaties for him, no.
Joe, do you? Well, you're too young for that, too. Do you remember at least seeing old photos of Bruce winning?
I have seen, I've seen the picture of the Wheaties box.
That's so cool. It is, by the way, National Father-in-Law Day, National Cheesecake Day, National Climb a Mountain Day, and National Whistleblower Day.
I'll do one of those. I think it's the cheesecake.
Okay, that's why we got an email that says there's a cheesecake in the fridge. I assume some show got one that we could go out there and try it.
Oh, thanks, guys. Now I'm jealous.
Sorry.
The amount of temptation.
Oh, great.
And 32 years ago today, now this is St. Louis history, but it was in 1993 during the crazy flooding that year, that the Monarch levee failed and Highway 40 in Chesterfield Valley was completely flooded. It actually cut off access to the Boone Bridge. That's how high the water was.
Wow.
Can you imagine that? 500 businesses were flooded. The current levee, by the way, is designed to prevent that area from a 500-year flood. We'll see if that... So far, it's been fine. But, Fred, you remember all those
times. Oh, yeah, yeah. We had to do, like, 6 or 7 day shifts.
Yeah, it was nuts.
Wait, 40 years ago is that what you said?
Yeah, 32 years ago in 1993. All I did was say, the flood stage is at blah, blah, blah on the Missouri River.
Wow.
And Fred found this story. There, 1 in 10 Americans is now a millionaire. I'm impressed by that. But, I mean, money doesn't go as far. The Swiss bank UBS says 23.8 million people in the U.S. have a net worth of at least $1 million. And that is a 15-fold increase from 30 years ago. Now, each day, 1,000 Americans become millionaires, thanks largely to rising home values. I mean, if you throw your house in there, that is a big chunk of change. And 401ks. But those seven figures aren't what they used to be. They say, as there was a guy at Running Point Capital Advisor who pretty much says, $1 million, quote, is the new mass affluent middleweight class, financially secure, but 2-0 short of private jet territory. I think that's accurate.
Sheesh.
But I was impressed that that many of us have done that well.
So we work with how many people you think on this floor? 20 at the most, maybe?
Probably 20.
So two of us?
Two of them? Two of somebody.
So just a
millionaire.
Take a closer look, yeah.
Yeah, and I think we've gotten rid of some of who probably were millionaires, Fred. You know how that works.
Yeah, oh yeah.
You are too expensive. Yeah. All right, I've got random news here. Pamela Anderson and Liam Neeson claim they're just friends, but a source says they have a budding romance. Has anybody been watching this but me? This is where I miss Mark, because Mark always knows this stuff.
Pamela Anderson, is she the one that's doing, does everything without makeup
these
days? Yes, okay.
Yes, Tommy Lee's ex
right.
wife.
I didn't even know that part.
Yes. they are the co-stars of the new Naked Gun movie that hits theaters on Friday. Hmm. And when you see them together, they went to an opening with each with their two sons. It was kind of sweet. I am pro this, but we'll see what happens. And Happy Gilmore 2 just set a new record for Netflix for the biggest U.S. opening weekend of all time for an original movie.
Wow.
Dang, have you seen that?
I watched the first 30 minutes after concert on Friday, so I have to... I was really disappointed by the beginning. I don't want to spoil it.
Okay.
So I have to watch it in its entirety.
Okay, fair enough.
I've seen it.
And, oh, Ethan, what, and?
I really enjoyed it.
People
does it get
love
better?
It.
Well, I know, I'm assuming I know what you were disappointed
yes.
by,
right.
which was also disappointing. It just was so unexpected.
Right.
Okay,
but,
you guys are doing a good job of covering it, because
yeah,
I have no idea what that is.
It really is out of left field. But overall, I thought, if this is the kind of movie that if you go in with expectations that it's going to be a good movie, like, separated from the nostalgia and all the cameos and the goofy humor, then you're
yes.
going to be disappointed because that's okay. not what Adam Sandler movies are at this point. But if you go in with a mindset of like, okay, this is meant to be fun, you know the style right of the first one, they're going to play off of that
yeah.
a lot, then I think you're going to look at it and you're going to say, this was a cute movie.
So it does get better for Joe?
I think so.
Okay.
I think so. The cameos make this movie, in my opinion.
Okay. That's
right.
fair.
I am marking it down for Saturday night. That is my Saturday night movie.
Okay.
I watched it this past Sunday, and I by the time I was finished, I was like, you know, obviously, it wasn't better than the first, but this was a cute movie. I would say it was better than Adam Sandler's recent stuff.
Okay, that's
fair. And what
fair.
Is this on?
Okay.
It's on Netflix.
Netflix.
Okay.
And they say that it had 46.7 million views over 3 days. That
wow.
is a lot.
There's some great cameos in there. Some awesome cameos.
Oh, now I'm going to have you tell me off the air because I don't think I'll watch this. And Kraft Mac and Cheese is unleashing a new pizza flavor for a limited time. I actually don't think this is a hideous idea. I'm not going to eat it. it's chemicals, but they say it's bold and savory notes of garlic and classic Italian spices capture the essence of a classic slice in every bite. Fred, pizza, mac and cheese.
Oh, I would try it.
Sure. I don't think that sounds horrible. Ethan?
So one of my favorite like pig out nights, you know, Saturday night, I'm just like bachelor life. I'm just going to pig out was having some pizza and some mac and cheese. Holy carbs, right?
See?
These two combine really well together. So I think this is going to
yes!
I think this is going to hit.
I really do. I think they must have had Joe Beamer. Yes.
Yeah, of course. I'll buy it saying it's for my son, and I'll eat it.
Kraft says the pizza flavor is now available for purchase at retailers across the U.S. It will remain available through back-to-school season. Okay, Ethan, it did not occur to me that people would eat pizza and mac and cheese. I just thought this was a good combination. But I think you're right. I didn't realize that was a thing.
I don't know if it is a thing. It might just be me. Oh, but no. And my friends, I
don't
know.
Ethan up here. I'll back him up. There's a place here that we would go after softball, and we would get it's famous for its pizza and its mac and cheese. And let me tell you, we'd eat both.
God dang it. I had no idea.
I had no idea either.
All right, plus if you live in New York City, Detroit, Chicago, and Detroit seemed random in there, but you may be able to order this if a delivery, and that option is available for certain ones. But the custom Kraft mac and cheese pizza delivery box, the whole thing. So if you want to try it, we should look it up, Fred, just to see if we can get any. And there was I saw this and it made me laugh. How fast could you eat a 1 pound head of iceberg lettuce? Huh? That's a good question. This is something I have not asked myself. Okay. The University of Minnesota has a lettuce club, and they have an annual speed eating contest. And they put part of it on Instagram. Let's play the sound.
Each lettuce is formally weighed before the competition begins. Then participants must place their right hand on their lettuce and recite the pledge.
Let the strength of the mighty iceberg carry us forward.
Then they start chowing down. To show you finish the entire head, you have to stand up, raise the stem, and prove your mouth is empty. The reigning champion, Nathan Thomas, crowned Ethan as head lettuce.
I beat the last head lettuce, and that's more than good enough.
So there you have it, people. I think we should do our own in here, although that sounds disgusting and probably none of us would be good at it. It might be entertaining.
Yeah, it's not the kind of thing I want to watch, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, that's a good point. It is radio. And finally, at Sue's News, we do have today's random fact. Evel Knievel was fired from his mining job after high school for attempting a motorcycle-type wheelie in a large earth mover. In the process, he accidentally hit the main power line for Butte, Montana, and caused a citywide power outage.
Checks out.
Wow.
And that's it. Isn't that crazy?
That is.
And that's it for Sue's News.
Thank you, Sue. When we come back, we'll talk with Brad Young. It's Joe Beamer in for Mark Reardon on 97.1 FM Talk. Joe Beamer in for Mark Reardon here on 97.1 FM Talk. And we are joined by our chief legal analyst and partner with Harris, Dow, Fisher & Young. He's also going to be the host of this very program on Friday. It is Brad Young. Brad, long time no see. How you doing?
Joe, I'm doing great, sir. Great to talk to you.
Great to talk with you as well. Let's get to the breaking story this afternoon. The grand jury indicting the St. Louis County executive, Sam Page. Brad, what can you tell us about the charges and the indictment?
Well, I've read through the indictment, Joe, and there are four charges. He was charged with two counts of committing what's called Class 4 election offenses, which are misdemeanors. And this all revolves around earlier this year, Sam Page instructed the county to mail out a postcard against what's called Proposition B, which would have allowed the St. Louis County Council to, in essence, fire members of the Sam Page administration if they weren't doing their job. And that failed at the box office. Sorry, I'm getting texts here right when I'm trying to talk to you, Joe. I apologize. But in the context of that, the other charge, which is really the only felony under this indictment, is stealing in excess of $25,000 because the postage involved with mailing out this postcard was approximately between $30,000 and $34,000. That's a felony. So when you put all this in a blender, Joe, if Sam Page is convicted on these charges, it would result in jail time between, and I've tried to calculate this up, between 3 and 10 years.
Now, you know, they say that a grand jury can indict a ham sandwich. So you're looking at this. I mean, is the proof there? Is it pretty substantive stuff that, you know, substantive stuff that, I mean, he's going to be very good chance that he could be found guilty on?
I think there's a very good chance, but literally all of this revolves and comes down to one thing, Joe. If you look at that postcard, what was the point of the postcard? And that's what the jury is ultimately going to have to decide here. Because the postcard, if it were informative, saying, if you hear the pros and cons of Proposition B, if that's what the postcard would have said, I would say there's really no chance he would be convicted here. But that's not what the postcard said. If you read over the postcard that was mailed out to not every voter in St. Louis County, only a very few voters, and that's another issue I'll get to in a second. But if you just look at the postcard itself, it really only provided the cons. What would be the bad parts? How would St. Louis County be harmed if they voted for Proposition B? And it didn't give any of the benefits. So it really wasn't a fair and balanced, informative postcard. It was really, at least in my opinion, it was a politically motivated postcard. But that will be up to the jury to decide. If they decide that this was a fair and balanced, informative piece of literature, then I think Sam Page is going to be acquitted on everything. If they find that that this was politically motivated, then it's going to be a conviction on all counts. So it's really an all or nothing proposition.
So is there anything that could happen that would mean that this would have to get re-voted on, since it did get voted down? If he is found guilty that he was using funds to, you know, to convince people to switch their vote, could it play out in getting this back on the ballot?
It could play out in terms of getting it back on the ballot, which just because it was voted down before wouldn't mean that it couldn't come back on the ballot again. But merely because he's convicted, that would have no impact on the fact that this ballot measure was voted down in the spring. So if the county council wants to put it back on the ballot, they could do that whether he's convicted or acquitted. It wouldn't really have any impact. But here's what the biggest impact would be. If Sam Page were convicted of that one felony count, then under Missouri law, a person who's convicted of a felony is ineligible to serve in a public office. So at that point, if he was convicted, it would go up on appeal. But once those appeals would be extinguished or exhausted, then at that point, if the conviction stands, Sam Page is no longer the county executive in St. Louis County.
All right, Brad, let's move on to Sam Altman, who I've heard more about Sam Altman in the last 6 months than I ever had before. He's the guy from ChatGPT. He has issued a warning about what to say to chatbot. You know, I did a show on this a few weeks ago, Brad, about AI and just the unknowns. When it comes to AI, I mean, there's really no legal anything surrounding it as we speak today, right?
No, there's nothing. There are no legal, generally speaking, there are no legal guardrails, constraints, benefits, detriments, restrictions. I mean, it's the wild, wild west, which from a libertarian's perspective isn't necessarily a bad thing. I mean, if you look at what China's doing right now, they're unrestrained. And the concerns are whoever wins the AI race could really dominate many things in our world, including military, economic issues, political issues. So right now there are no restraints on AI except for ChatGPT. And here are the restraints. The New York Times sued ChatGPT and OpenAI earlier this year for copyright infringement, stating that that ChatGPT reproduced copyrighted material from the New York Times, and therefore there's damages owed. Now, because of that, the judge, I think it was Magistrate Judge Ona Wang in May, issued an order in this case stating that everything that's done with ChatGPT, all inquiries that are done, all answers that are done, have to be preserved to determine whether or not there are any ongoing evidence of copyright infringement. And so with that, Joe, everything that's typed in at ChatGPT right now has to be preserved by the court. That's not a statute. That's not a regulation. That's simply a court order from this judge in New York. And presumably that court order will continue as long as this litigation goes on.
Oh, man, I'll tell you, Brad, I'm all for, you know, advances in technology, but some of the stuff AI can do, like I can take a picture of my kitchen and it'll make 8 copies of what it could look like in the 1980s. That scares me a little bit in 2 seconds.
Yeah, it is rather scary. But when you look at it again from the business standpoint, from the national security standpoint, at this point, too much regulation on AI could really hamper us in terms of competing with China. But also, I need to make this very, very clear here, and that's the following, that this rule or this order from the court that requires everything that ChatGPT does be preserved, that doesn't apply to any other AI company that's out there, whether it's the Microsoft version, I think it's Copilot, or the Google version, Gemini, or Elon Musk's version. This only applies to ChatGPT.
Now, before we get out of here, Brad, we do have to talk about the defamation lawsuit that French President Emmanuel Macron and his wife have filed against Candace Owens. I mean, what should we expect from this?
Boy, that's a great question. Here's the legal standard, Joe, and then let me lay out where this is going to go. All right. Clearly, Candace Owens is a public figure, and the Macrons filed the lawsuit in the United States. So under New York Times versus Sullivan from 1964, literally what they have to prove is that, number one, it's false. That has to be proven. So they've got to show that Mrs. Macron was born biologically female in order to defeat this. And then secondly, they've got to show that Candace Owens acted with what's called actual malice. That means either A, she knew Mrs. Macron was actually born a woman, or B, that she acted with reckless disregard as to whether it was false or not. And those are the legal standards. And listen, it's very hard in the United States, very difficult to win a libel case against someone who is a public figure. Having said that, since it's rather easy to prove whether this is true or not, I mean, I'm not saying that, you know, she hikes her skirt for the cameras or anything, but literally you could have documents from a doctor certify whether she was born male or born female. Once that happens, I think Candace Owens may have some liability here.
I mean, can't she do that before they go into a courtroom? Like, I guess that's the question I'm asking. Like, couldn't this all be shot down with just, like you said, a doctor's note or something proving that she is and has been a woman?
That's true, but then that second part still hasn't been satisfied, and that's going to take a jury, I think, to do that. Because if it is, let's just assume for discussion purposes, Joe, that Mrs. Macron is, in fact, a biologically born female. If that's the case, then the question becomes, because this liability standard is so high for going against public figures, then someone has to determine whether or not Candace Owens acted with reckless disregard on whether it was true or whether it was not true. And then someone has to assign damages. And so that, I think, means that we're probably going to see a jury trial on this.
So what can the Macrons gain in a judgment in their favor in America?
Well, they could get monetary damages. Of course, collecting that is a different matter. That's always difficult in the United States. Just because you get a judgment doesn't mean, you know, you can't take a judgment and go spend it at Walmart. Okay. You have to translate that into collecting money, and that becomes extremely difficult. But it's more, I think, not about the money. It's about the PR. And from the Macron standpoint, I think they're just trying to shut down this speculation about Mrs. Macron, whether she was born biologically male or female. And a successful lawsuit or a successful settlement against Candace Owens would, in all likelihood, achieve that PR goal.
Wow. Well, lots to keep our eye on. Brad, always great talking with you, and I look forward to talking to you in the future and listening to you this Friday.
All right, Joe, great to talk to you as always, my friend.
That is Brad Young, Chief Legal Analyst at 97.1, also partner with Harris, Dow, Fisher & Young, and the host of this very program Friday at 3 o'clock. I also have to say, Brad also came on one of my Buffalo shows a few months ago and greatly appreciated. Always great talking with Brad. When we come back, Dennis Hancock will be joining us. He is a St. Louis County Council member. Yes, continuing the breaking news that I almost said Erie County. See, St. Louis County Council, County Executive Sam Page indicted. We'll talk with Dennis Hancock after this on 97.1 FM Talk. Joe Beamer in for Mark Reardon here on 97.1 FM Talk. And we bring in St. Louis County Councilman Dennis Hancock. Dennis, good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you, Joe.
Breaking news today is the county executive has been indicted by a grand jury, charged with two counts of committing class 4 election offenses. Your reaction to the indictment and what do you think about all this?
Well, at the time that he was doing that, I know several of us on the council told him, you can't do that. That violates state statute. It violates the county charter, and you just can't spend money on a clearly partisan mailing piece. It's just the wrong thing to do. My reaction to it is I'm not surprised, but at the same time I'm very disappointed. Obviously, this is not a good day for the citizens of St. Louis County. And we just went through this a few years ago with Dr. Page's predecessor. He was convicted of a felony and went to federal prison for 4 years.
Wow. Wow. Now, do you think Sam Page should step down? What do you think the next step should be?
Well, I'm not going to call for his resignation. I think he's entitled to his day in court. But I think that what he needs to do while he's waiting for that day in court is to consider the impact this is going to have on his family, on his friends, on his constituents, and on all the people of St. Louis County. This is going to drag down everyone in St. Louis County, and I would hope that he would take that into consideration if this is going to go on and on for several months while he, if he decides to fight this. I would hope that he would take a different approach. But like I said, I'm not going to call on him to resign.
Now, you said, you were saying at the time that, you can't do this. This is a violation. I mean, were your colleagues on the other side also saying that?
They were. Actually, the dynamic on the council is such that we have a working coalition of 3 Republicans and 3 Democrats, and we work very closely together on most issues. And we were all in agreement at the time that, he shouldn't be doing this. This was the wrong thing to do. But he ignored our advice and decided to push forward with this anyway.
What do you think this means for Proposition B? Do you think it should go back on the ballot since, it was these mailers were put out to kind of sway people one way? I mean, should this go without the county putting mailers out on it?
Well, I think that's an interesting idea. I haven't talked to any of my colleagues about it as far as putting it back on the ballot. It would be next April before we could do that. There's no November ballot this year. But I think that before we do that, I would advise the voters in St. Louis County to consider very seriously who their next county executive is going to be. Do we really want to go down this road further or do we want to maybe go in a different direction?
You see the indictment, and as you said, this is something that you saw happening in real time. I mean, do you see a scenario where, as things stand right now, Sam Page is not found guilty? I know he's due his day in court. I get that. But with the evidence put in front of you and what you've seen in real time, I mean, can you imagine him not being found guilty on the charges as they stand today?
I believe that these charges are very serious. And I think that they are, I don't think this is the end of this story. I think that, they have a court date, I believe, scheduled for August 29th. And so that's almost another month to continue to investigate. I know that the Highway Patrol confiscated yesterday and took some other records with them. So it's I believe they're still looking at the evidence, and who knows what direction this is going to end up going in.
Hey, Dennis, really appreciate you taking some time out of your day to join us, and we'll talk again soon, okay?
Sounds great, Joe. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. That is St. Louis County Councilman Dennis Hancock on the indictment of St. Louis County Executive Sam Page. Again, you've heard Brad talk about him. You've heard Dennis talk about it. And I mean, in this day and age, to hear that both parties were kind of in agreement when this was happening, we will keep our eye on that. Not the last you'll hear of this. When we come back, we're going to check in on the White House. Our friend Jeff Murdoch from the Washington Times joins us next on 97.1 FM Talk. Joe Beamer in for Mark Reardon.
Get more at 97.1talk.com.